Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. For the podcast this week, we are back to EMID, that's the Emergency Medicine Infectious Disease portion of the podcast that is held by Patrick Bafuma, and he interviews people monthly to discuss different topics in emergency medicine and specifically in infectious disease. This time around, he has fellow PA Janelle Bledorn, who is talking about gonorrhea and chlamydia testing, which I think is something that we tend to forget about, the importance of what kind of methods do we do? Does everyone need to be swabbed? If so, do we have to perform the swabs, or can the patient do it? Or can we just rely on their urine? And this is all broken down into the podcast, so make sure to listen. And we have show notes on the website, as well as the details, the numbers, the actual citations. So check all that out as well. But let's get right into it.
Janelle, why do we care about gonorrhea and chlamydia? Why don't we start there?
Sounds great. Well, Patrick, we care a lot about gonorrhea and chlamydia because these are very, very prevalent diseases in the population, especially for the sexually active population that may be asymptomatic. They may have no symptoms at all, and they may have one of these infections that could have grave implications, not only for their health or for a patient's health acutely, but also down the road. We're talking about things that could affect fertility and the ability to have reproduction in the future. That's one of the big things that we think about. And then also we do have concern about this because of the possibility of things like pelvic inflammatory disease or more severe type of infections. And of course, there's always that social aspect or that psychosocial aspect of that too. These are sexually transmitted infections. And so, let's say somebody turns up positive for like gonorrhea or chlamydia. Of course, they're going to be asking you, is there any chance that this test could be wrong? What is the false positive rate on this? So that's kind of what we worry about gonorrhea and chlamydia in my eyes. Do you have anything else for you want to add to that?
Do you have any idea in terms of what percentage of patients are asymptomatic? And then do you see, another question is the patient who comes in who complains of urinary symptoms, any idea as to a percentage of patients who are either co-infected or that urinary symptomatology is actually a sexually transmitted infection?
So I don't actually have the exact numbers off the top of my head, but I'm sure that we can dig those up here. But I do know just anecdotally, and I think that you've seen the same thing too, people that have, dysuria, especially like end of stream dysuria for women, where they might come in and say, I think I have a urinary tract infection, they may ultimately end up having a sexually transmitted infection. I know that, you can actually look at some of the findings in like a urinalysis that can sort of like point you in a direction, like could this person have just a UTI, or could they have an STI plus a UTI, or do they have just an STI alone? And so, there's been a couple of studies that come out to say that if you have a urinalysis with somebody that's got urinary symptoms that's positive for nitrates or protein, about half of those people are going to end up having UTIs. If it's positive for like leukocytes or blood, maybe around 60% of those people are going to have like a sexually transmitted infection. And so you can kind of look at your urinalysis in order to kind of guide you to think like, okay, this person came in with urinary tract infection symptoms, but should I actually be adding on like a gonorrhea and chlamydia test in order to rule that out or rule that in for that patient?
Some of the numbers that I've seen, at least for men, is there was one study that we were looking at that talks about males entering a New York City jail who were just sort of screened without any symptomatology, just here, pee in this cup. And their rates of infection on over 2,400 tested individuals was just under 7%. And these were presumably asymptomatic people. So do you have any information on the female population?
I don't. I do know that, you know, specifically for females, but I do know that when you look at like screening, you kind of presume that the general population has about 5%, where you would expect 5% of the population to be positive. I believe that includes both men and women. I think we should talk about like a little bit like about like the collection, you know, because nobody wants to have a swab, you know, especially for men, first catch is actually better than the swab when it comes to, I think that it's chlamydia is actually better than the swab, for chlamydia.
Is first catch, is it like the first void when you wake up, or is it a midstream? Is it like when you first start?
Yeah. So that's a great question. So first catch is actually, one of the ways that these newer gonorrhea and chlamydia tests, can actually, it's an okay specimen, for these tests to be run on. And a lot of people actually think that first catch has to be like the first void of the morning or something like that. In fact, the first catch is actually just that first little bit of urine. So usually about like the first 5 to 20 cc's of urine, when a patient has not urinated within the previous hour. And that's opposed to like the first void, which is like the first time that somebody has urinated during the day. You don't need to do that in order to have a gonorrhea and chlamydia test taken from a urine specimen. And this is as opposed to a midstream catch, which is sort of what we want to have people do when we're getting a urine specimen for, say, like a urinalysis. And so a lot of times this first catch is also called like a quote unquote dirty catch. And so just a little bit of like, I guess, nomenclature when it comes to when you catch the urine.
All right. And so we've talked about urinary gonorrhea chlamydia testing. How does that compare to the swabs?
Yeah. So it kind of depends, depending on whether you're talking about men or women, and also when you're talking about whether you're looking at chlamydia or at gonorrhea. So for men, if you're looking at these urinary specimens and, you know, all of these studies, there's actually the USPFTF, there was a great comparison of like 7 or 8 different nucleic acid amplification tests. They had a bunch of studies on that. They actually found that the sensitivity and specificity for men getting urinary specimens was quite excellent. You know, we're talking about like sensitivities and specificities for chlamydia, like in the 97 to 100% range. For gonorrhea, it was a little bit lower, so like that 90 to upper 90% range. For women, on the other hand, when you're looking at urinary specimens, your sensitivity is actually quite low. So for chlamydia, it was actually around like 70 to 90%. And there was a wide variety of sensitivities for these studies, but as low as like 72%. Specificity was great. So upper 90s up to 100%. And then for gonorrhea, the sensitivities, again, for women with those urinary samples was around 78% in some studies. But again, the specificity of chlamydia, of the gonorrhea was excellent, like the 99 to 100%. So the bottom line there is for urinary specimens for women, you're going to have many more false negatives compared to swabs. We know that the swab, whether you're doing like an endocervical swab or a vaginal swab, has sensitivities in the 90s, like in the 90% range for women.
What about the take-home swabs for women? How does that look for sensitivity and specificity?
That is super interesting too. So we kind of refer to these as the patient performed swabs, as opposed to like a clinician collected swabs. And we're not expecting women to, you know, get an endocervical sample with this because, I mean, quite frankly, they're not going to be able to do that with great accuracy. So these are actually just vaginal swabs. And the sensitivity and specificity of these are quite excellent. So for chlamydia, you know, we're talking in the like 96-98% range for sensitivity and specificity. And then for gonorrhea, around like 96-99%. So really, really quite excellent. And that's opposed to those clinician collected swabs, which we know are in the upper 90s. And so, I mean, really, it's, and that's based off several different studies. So really, the numbers look quite good. And the other interesting point, you know, when we're looking at evidence-based medicine, of course, you think about like, you know, the clinician-centered outcomes. But the patient-centered outcomes for these is that patients are much more pleased with their care, and they have higher satisfaction with their care when swabs are taken from, you know, by themselves as opposed by a clinician, which, I mean, I think that sounds pretty obvious, right?
I mean, that's something that you can do in the office. If you are in the emergency department, it might be a little bit weird to have them dropping off a sample at the front desk. They may look at you a little bit funny.
Actually, we actually have our patients sometimes do this if they decline a pelvic exam for any reason. We'll actually have them take our swab into the bathroom and have them do their own swab in the bathroom and go ahead and send that off to the lab. And that's, you know, really, that's what these papers that cited this, it was actually collected in clinics. And it wasn't them doing it at home. It was actually them doing it in a medical setting. So this is something that I do in practice, especially for patients who don't necessarily need a pelvic examination because I'm not concerned about like, you know, PID or something like that for them. But let's say they've already given us like a clean specimen urine. It's too late for us to do like a catch. And so I'll send them to the bathroom with a swab for a self-collection.
So now are you using the same GC chlamydia swab that you would use for the pelvic exam?
Yes, I am. We looked at our package inserts. And so that's one thing I would recommend you all to do is look at the package inserts at your institutions to see if it's approved for vaginal collection. The FDA actually has a lot of these NAAT swabs are approved for endocervical and vaginal collection.
So NAATA meaning?
The nucleic acid amplification testing. And that's the new gold standard. And so it's actually, you know, just as specific as culture, but it's much easier for like specimen transport. And so that's, you know, all the gonorrhea and chlamydia tests, I'm not going to say all, but almost all of the gonorrhea and chlamydia tests that you see out there these days are going to be that NAAT technology.
We've seen instances where it's not a clear or even that it is a clear UTI based on you know, nitrites and protein, and maybe there's something funny in the story, or maybe they just say, yeah, it hurts a little bit when I pee. I guess it's much easier to just add it on to the urinary testing for GC chlamydia. But do you see, how are you approaching that? Are you adding it on in young women and men as sort of a screening tool? Are you just saying, yeah, you have a UTI, but could you go swab in the bathroom as well? How are you approaching that?
So yeah, my personal approach, I really do take an individualized approach to each patient that I see. And a lot of that, you know, comes from their history. It comes from the medical decision-making that, you know, we have based on their symptomology, as well as their, you know, any risk factors that they may have too. I know that, you know, there is data that says, you know, you can look for these certain things in the urinalysis. And so like, if you've got positive nitrates, that's much more likely for that to be a urinary tract infection versus a sexually transmitted infection. And so, I mean, I think that there's a lot of gray zone, and I think it would be very interesting to talk to other ER providers, you know, and I'm sure that I'm not alone among other ER providers. A lot of times, I mean, we love to order tests. Don't we love to order tests? A lot of times we will add on, you know, gonorrhea and chlamydia because, you know, we want to be safe. We want to make sure that we cover all of our bases. I think we do a lot of that for a lot of different conditions. But that is one area where, you know, perhaps we do a little bit of over-testing.
You see a patient, you want to be doing gonorrhea and chlamydia testing, and you're going to have them do a self swab. What's your conversation like with a patient, particularly someone who may not have done this before?
Yeah. So when I've got a patient that I want to get gonorrhea and chlamydia testing on, but for whatever reason, we're not able to do this with a swab or with a dirty catch urine, I will go ahead and explain that procedure to them. And so I'll sit with them in their examination room. I'll go ahead and get the specimen collection kit out. So it's got the little tube and it's got a swab that's in a sterile packaging. Basically I just explained to them that they are going to, you know, open up the packaging on the handle side, that they're going to, once they're in the bathroom, then they're basically going to insert that swab into the vagina until they can kind of feel it on the vaginal walls and twirl it a little bit, and then go ahead and remove it from the vagina and take it out and put the swab into the tube, and then break off the end of that swab and screw the cap on the tube, and then just bring it right back into their room. There have been times, I always use the teach back method too, so have the patient explain to me in their own terms what I have just told them. If they have trouble with it, I do sometimes open up like another kit to kind of like show them what I'm doing or what I want them to do. And I've always had great success with patients being able to do that.
You have a patient and testing comes back positive.
Mm-hmm.
Do they need a test of cure? Do they need to get retested? How does that work?
We're lucky in our emergency department that we actually have resource nurses that do those calls for our patients, because, I mean, these tests, even though the nucleic acid amplification tests are much faster than the cultures back in the day, they're still rarely going to have results come back while the patient is still in the emergency department. So we have nurses that do that counseling over the phone with them. And obviously we have them follow the CDC guidelines for treatment on that. Interestingly enough, the CDC does no longer advise a test of cure, which is defined as a test that's about 3 to 4 weeks after treatment, unless, and there's a couple of unlesses here. The first one is unless you suspect that this person did not adhere to therapy, or if they have persistent symptoms, or if they have suspicion of a reinfection. So that's the CDC's recommendations for test of cure. But they do recommend retesting, which is different than a test of cure, apparently, at the 3 month mark. It's interesting to note that most failed tests of cures are actually not from treatment failure, meaning like, you know, that super bug gonorrhea that's apparently happening down in Southeast Asia now, but it's actually from reinfection. So a lot of times maybe the partner wasn't treated, or maybe they had a new partner in that amount of time that was also infected, or maybe, you know, the partner wasn't treated properly or something like that. I think that one of the reasons why the CDC sort of moved away from, you know, like the test of cure is a lot of people were doing it too soon, and it would result in a lot of retreatment for people that didn't need that retreatment, because it's interesting to note that there's actually like residual nucleic acid from chlamydia that's no longer infective because it's already been treated by the proper antibiotic regimen, but that residual nucleic acid from the chlamydia actually still would show up as a positive test for up to 3 weeks after therapy. And for gonorrhea, it's a little bit less amount of time, so it's about 2 weeks. And so that's something important to note, that if somebody, you know, comes back in, they had a positive chlamydia test, say, you know, gonorrhea and chlamydia test, say like a week and a half ago. If you send off another gonorrhea and chlamydia test, you know, and they've already been treated, it still may be positive, even though they don't still have the infection.
Okay, how about, you said that you have resource nurses that will handle this. What is institutional policy or best practice in terms of partner treatments? Are you offering a refill on medications? Are you saying have them contact us, have them get tested? How are you approaching any potential partners?
Yeah, we always advise the person that we're calling or the patient that's being called to notify their partners and tell them that they need to be treated for that. And we advise that they follow up with their primary care providers or any of like free local clinics, that type of thing. Interesting, when I was in practice in California, and I actually worked at Planned Parenthood in California for some time out there. There were state monies that we had free partner treatments. And so we were able to dispense medications for partners, like from our clinics, and partners, could be treated through some of these state funds, which I thought was a fabulous idea. But I know that that's something that does not exist in every state. But if you're curious if your state has that, that's something that you can look into.
So what's your education that is being provided to patients who test positive? Are you saying no sex for a week, no sex for 2 weeks, no sex until you're retested and your partner's treated? What is your line that you're saying to patients?
Generally, it's going to be 1 week of time away from having sex, and that's going to be from the start of treatment. I don't have any statistics for that, but that's essentially what I remember learning back in school. Maybe that's been updated. And that's generally what I've been telling people. Again, we don't do test of cure. And honestly, that third option that you said there is probably unrealistic for a lot of people. So generally 1 week.
All right. So to recap, self-swabs, thoughts?
I think self-swabs are a great idea for your patients to consider. You're going to have patients that are going to have just as good of results when it comes to the sensitivity and specificity of that swab. Plus, it's going to increase their comfort level and their satisfaction in terms of their visit.
Seems like the baseline rate of infection seems to be about 7% is what we're seeing in various papers here. And then to recap on test of cure, test of reinfection, can you go over that one more time?
Yeah, absolutely. No need for test of cure at that 3 to 4 week mark. However, the CDC does recommend retesting for people that were positive for gonorrhea and chlamydia and treated, retesting at the 3 month mark.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Any other thoughts or concerns that the listener should know about?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
That wraps up the podcast this week. Make sure to check out the show notes once again, because we always have some additional details there. It goes over the percentages. It has the citations in it, as well as just kind of a brief overview, because we believe that anytime you go through our stuff, you should be able to look back at it later and have a quick review. You don't always have to listen to the full podcast, but make sure to encourage and show this to other people, because these are things that seem to be ignored quite a bit, and we just follow what we traditionally do versus looking at the newer evidence. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.